All right. Hey there, this is Bram Kanstein and you're listening to Bitcoin for Millennials. Together with my guests on this podcast, I go on a journey to discover how our current financial system works, why it's flawed, and why Bitcoin is the most relevant technology you should understand and adopt. In this episode, I'm joined by David Branscum. He's the Chief Commercial Officer at Rebel Mining, a company that offers custom solutions to help enterprise companies mine Bitcoin. He believes that as with almost any problem in energy, Bitcoin fixes this. With experience in immersion and hydrocooling, advances in chip technology and heat recapture innovations, David knows we are just scratching the surface of what Bitcoin can do to make a better future. So welcome, David. I'm happy to have you on the pod.
Thank you, Bram. Happy to be here.
Yeah, it was great meeting you in real life. Super fun to meet people you sort of know from the internet. How did you experience the Bitcoin Atlantis conference?
Oh, it was good. I mean, that kind of felt like going to the Super Bowl if you're a Bitcoiner, or you know, maybe yeah. maybe the World Cup, right? Depending on what country you're in. But I mean, people from all over the world coming, getting to meet like you and some other people from Europe that you know I hadn't met in person. You get to see them in person. It's a unique experience, especially when you realize you're a lot taller in person than I thought on Twitter. So it's you're very tall.
Funny comments on Twitter.
Yeah, especially compared to other people in Madeira. I don't know what happened, but you're like twice as tall as most the average man. So. Who was that you took a picture with on Twitter?
Eric Stacks.
Yeah. With Eric Stacks.
Or yeah, Luke Broyles. Yeah.
Luke. Luke had shrunk. Luke had shrunk and you had grown. So,
yeah.
But it is really, it is kind of surreal. I met Michael Saylor real briefly in the, just walking around the, concourse and I grabbed him and he was nice enough to say hello and had a whole conversation with me and he walked away. And I thought to myself, I was like, I didn't get a selfie with Michael Saylor, but I literally just had a 10-minute conversation with him about finances and his strategy. And he was like, he was just so very genuinely interested. It was impressive. Samson Moak, got to meet Samson in person for the first time. Jack Maulers, right? So you meet these people that are building incredible things. Doing incredible things with Bitcoin. And they're, I guess I've been kind of in the mining space, right? The infrastructure side. So anybody from the financial side of Bitcoin or financial or development, that's very fascinating to me, right? Because that's not my background. So I try to understand as many of the tentacles of Bitcoin as I can, at least know which direction that octopus is reaching, right? That sort of thing. And and just to know, I don't need to know the details or how everything works, but I need to know what they're trying to accomplish. That way, if something comes my direction that I can help someone else with, you know, trying to push that, put those puzzle pieces together and help people out, whatever they're working on. So it was, man, just nonstop, no sleep, fantastic, you know, a Bitcoin experience and meeting new friends, making new friends and getting to meet your heroes it was a blast. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. I had the same experience. Just so fun that everyone is so approachable. Everyone is into the same thing, but you know, there's all these people from different backgrounds and it's just cool to learn about their expertise. That's, I have the same, like there's all these dimensions of Bitcoin that, you know, you come across, but we'll definitely get to that. That is on the list to talk about. And but first, I wanted to ask you, like,
real quick, can I make an announcement? Just so, and I haven't made like an official announcement in this kind of setting, but I did put it on LinkedIn, but I forgot to tell you. So, I have recently left Rebel Mining as Chief Commercial Officer and Energia, which was my former company. I'm with a new company called Veya Energy, VEYA, and we are. This is a quick, just real quick. This is a move to, I started my Bitcoin journey on the infrastructure side coming in through immersion cooling. And then I very slowly just moved upstream to the power source. Veya Energy is going to be operating and putting together behind the meter off-grid mining opportunities, natural gas and other renewable energies like waste energy, things like that, those sorts of projects. So that is, I just wanted to, since you introduced me to the Rebel, just wanted to let you know I've moved to a different position, but I'm focused specifically on energy production and how it can tie in and benefit Bitcoin and vice versa, how Bitcoin mining can benefit the energy infrastructure we have, not just in the US, but anywhere, especially reusing that energy multiple times for, through heat recapture and things like that. So just wanted to give you that little, quick little update. That just happened like a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. Awesome. It's on my list to talk about because I'm super, super interested in that, but not very knowledgeable yet. So we'll definitely get to that. The first thing I wanted to ask you is, which generation do you belong to and how is your experience educating like your generational peers?
Are you trying to dox my age here, Bram? Is that what you're trying to do?
I don't know. You don't have to say your age.
I am. It depends on who you ask. I'm on kind of the tail end of what you would consider to be Gen Y, probably Gen X and Gen Y. I'm not like a millennial. So I was born in, I'm 46 years old. So I was born in 78. So whatever that number is, that kind of puts me on the edge of a couple of different generations. So I feel like it's an interesting kind of place to be. I have a lot of just overall business experience. But I also have, you know, a family and a mortgage, and I'm further down than a lot of Bitcoiners are when they're in their 20s and their 30s. And so I am in kind of a unique, I think, spot. I'm not as old as, you know, like, you know, you've got some guys like Michael Saylor and then you've got Bob Burnett that have a ton of experience, right? That I don't have as much experience as they do. But I'm also not, you know, fresh out of, you know, university or still trying to kind of figure things out, you know, from a, you know, which direction. Well, that's not true. I don't know which direction my life is. It changes every 6 months. So, but I've had that experience. So it's kind of a weird spot to be, right? Most people in this space are either older than me or younger than me. Not a lot that's right there at that same age.
Hey there. Thanks so much for listening to this episode. I just really want to ask you for a quick favor. Over the last few months, I've seen that only 75% of people who listen to this podcast or watch it on YouTube are actually subscribed. The most important thing I'm currently focusing on, next to hopefully giving you interesting conversations, is growing this podcast subscriber base so I can continue with it into the future. I want to thank everyone who has been viewing and listening to Bitcoin for Millennials, leaving comments here and sending me DMs. It's been super, super motivating. So thank you so much. So I really want to ask you to please hit the subscribe button on YouTube or follow me on your favorite podcasting app if you are enjoying this podcast. Thanks again for joining me on this journey. Now back to the conversation. Yeah, I just quickly Googled. You're like on the tail end of Gen X and
yep.
And at the start of the millennials, but like, so your age range, well, you know, people who have older kids,
yeah,
of course a mortgage, house, etc. Like mm-hmm. when you talk to people in your age range, like about Bitcoin, mm-hmm. they are already obviously well entrenched in the old fiat money system. So is that something you run into when you talk about that?
So this is kind of weird, but like I looked up the other day and I can't remember the last time I talked to like friends my age, right? Like I made a point I made a point to go have dinner with some friends the other night, who are my age, and they've got boys about my boys' age. I've got two boys, 17 and 13. And so I'm kind of on the tail end of that, right? My 13-year-old only has about 5 years left until he's out of high school, right? And so whether he wants to go to college or whatever, I don't know, but we're working at I don't know. I'm so into Bitcoin that it's like I don't really talk to what I'd call normies much anymore. It's almost painful to have like those like conversations about, "Oh, hey, how's your job going?" right? You know, cuz my job working in Bitcoin specifically feels so like revolutionary and startup, and it's different than, you know, what most of my, you know, contemporaries are doing that at my age. It's hard. It's actually kind of almost physically painful to sit through some of these. I'm trying to be nice and I'm like, I don't really care about you know, who you're going to vote for. I don't really care about this. I don't really care about, you know, what's going on here. It's like, it's when you see Bitcoin, psychologically, something changes for you. And it's very interesting. I'm at two opposite ends of the spectrum on the Bitcoin side. It's like I focus on the hardware and energy side, infrastructure, the tangible, but I'm really super intrigued by how Bitcoin tied into energy and the way that it's tied into energy down the, on the other end ends up basically changing the way you think, the way you act, you know, the psychology of who you are as a person. It changes everything.
Yeah.
And I thought it was just going to be, okay, this is going to be a cool job and I'm going to make some money. But now it's like, I think everything in my life looks different, like everything. And you can't go back. It's weird.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll talk about that too in a minute, because I think that's super interesting and I can definitely relate to that. So I'm super interested to hear how that went for you. But first I wanted to ask, what misconceptions did you have about Bitcoin initially and how did they change? Like, what did you have to do or learn to change those?
So there's kind of two things. My favorite phrase that I've heard a lot of people, some good friends say is, you know, when were you orange pilled, but when did you first ignore Bitcoin? And for me, it was 2013. Like I could have gotten in at 2013, 2014 timeframe. And I had all these computers and you could still mine on, you know, GPUs. And I had all these 480 GPUs in these computers at this call center I'd set up. There's not a lot, maybe like a dozen of them. But I had a guy that was working for me say, we should mine Bitcoin. We even have free electricity. We should mine Bitcoin. It's like, what's Bitcoin? So he talked to me for about 30, 45 minutes. And I got done. And he goes, so what do you think? And I said, that is the dumbest, stupidest thing I've ever heard. That's magic internet money. It's never going to work. It's never going to work, right? And I like left it alone and ignored it for another, I don't know, maybe 7 years. And then 2019-ish, I started kind of looking at it, right? And so my biggest misconception was just not taking it at face value and looking, kind of saying, oh, this is interesting technology. I need to dig into. That's the biggest misconception. People just assume it's a scam or because they don't understand it, right? But that happens with everything in life. If you don't take the time to understand something, you don't know if it's true or not. So that's a challenge. And that's the biggest misconception. People just think it's a scam, especially on the normie side. And then the, what was the other part of that? I lost my train of thought. The other part of that was...
So when did you... So you thought it was a scam or that was a misconception? Well, not what you thought, but you had that misconception. Like, how did you actually get it?
Yeah. So this is... Okay. Thank you. So the other end of that connection is a misconception is people... I say I work in Bitcoin and people start asking me technical questions about Bitcoin and I don't know, right? I can't tell you how the time chain works. I'm not a developer. I don't understand how transactions... I like watching the meme pool, but I don't like understand how all the blocks are put together. I don't understand all that technology, right? I'm not that technical a person. When people ask me, how long have you studied Bitcoin? I say, well, I've actually studied Bitcoin less than I've studied the monetary systems, right? So started learning. I read the Bitcoin standard, which honestly for a newbie with no finance background, is kind of challenging, right? I would read a chapter and then I'd spend like 20, 30 minutes on Google researching what I just read, right? To verify it, understand economics, the history of money, all that stuff, right? It was almost like a textbook. I'd like read a chapter and then I'd have to like write and answer questions and stuff.
It's a study.
So, yeah, it is a study. And so there's other books out there now that, you know, Brian Demint's got one that's great, I think good for normies, kind of as an intro, as a primer, right? And then you dive into sifting and you get a, you know, deeper in, right? But what I found was between that and podcasts with like the first, you know, What is Money podcast, Michael Saylor, what's his name? Andreas Antonopoulos, right? I started watching some of those like older podcasts. And understanding, I've studied money as a whole and the dollar system and previous fiat currencies and history more than I've studied Bitcoin. So it's like, I don't need to know how Bitcoin works. I just need to know how it fixes the problems, right? I probably know more about inflation, the central banking system, Austrian economics, all of these things more than I actually know about Bitcoin, because those things are what taught me what's broken and how Bitcoin actually fixes it, right? So for me, it wasn't really saying, you know, oh, I understand and get Bitcoin. I was like, oh, if I think Bitcoin has even a 1% chance of doing what people say it's going to do, I know that my dollar has a 90% or has a 100% chance it's going to be worth less next year than it is right now, right? So that alone, knowing how broken our fiat system was, just made me say, I don't know if it's better or not, but the chances are this is a smarter system, because I know 100% that my dollar is going to be debased, right? So that was kind of the study that got me all in. And I'm happy to say I got to zero. I don't know if that's the right term. Maybe I'm 100% Bitcoin, right? But I have very little fiat cash at all at any given moment. I am just learning about the new system, how to, you know, manage taxable income, KYC versus non-KYC Bitcoin, how to manage it from a long-term retirement or, you know, liquid savings, liquidity standpoint, all of those things, learning how to live on a fiat or live on a Bitcoin standard, even when I'm still living in a fiat world. And I think that is a big opportunity for education to teach Bitcoiners and people and normies as well, to say, this can be done. And if someone streamlines that process, like there's products out there like Strike that, you know, and Fold card and things like that, that are getting close, right? Once we get to a point where they're just like, yeah, deposit, you can have your checks or your EFTs or electronic funds transfers or whatever, wires directly into this, we will put it in Bitcoin. And then when you need to spend it, we will automatically do it in Bitcoin, take your Bitcoin and convert it and send, right? Like Strike does. So whoever kind of fixes that and makes it smooth, we'll see adoption move pretty quickly.
Awesome. I think we experience a little bit lag, so I'm going to wait until you're fully finished and then I'll ask my question.
Okay.
You're in a hotel room, right? So sometimes it's a bit laggy, but it's all good. So you shared with me that you think energy is money. Can you elaborate on that a bit?
I think that the best possible yardstick, and I'm probably stealing this from, you know, Michael Saylor, when he was first talking to Breedlove on those first seven or eight podcasts, whatever it was. Part of me kind of knew this, but hearing it explained the way he did kind of clarified it. The best way to measure anything is in energy. The question is just, what is the measuring stick, right? Because energy is a fairly intangible thing for us, right? You have, you know, kinetic energy, you have stored energy, right now I have the energy to stand up and walk across the room, but I'm not doing it, right? So I have stored energy ready to do that when I need it. It's a very interesting concept, but the more you dwell on it, you realize there's nothing we do that doesn't involve energy. Like, I mean, from the second we are created by birth, right? That is, or even before birth, inception, that is energy required. And it's thousands and thousands of years and millennia of energy that has kind of slowly come down to this one point in our lives where we're created, right? And then there's energy additional energy required, you know, by the mother, you know, to grow that child, birth that child, and then you have to feed the child to give it energy and all this, and there's so much more energy to grow. And then you're not just talking about flipping a light switch and, you know, doing compute power, but like, you know, building a building, manual labor, right? It's all technically energy. The question is just, how do you measure it, right? So if we measured everything in kilocalories or joules, if you will, you could say, okay, this guy did one oil barrel's worth of work today, or this guy did, you know, this many CFM of gas or coal or you know, this much electricity, this much kilowatt hour per work or what, right? But those are very difficult and problematic, right? So you need something in the middle. And up to this point, all we've had is just, you know, it's not tied to energy. It's not tied to anything. It maybe at the one point it was pegged, we, you know, can use mm-hmm. gold and you can peg to gold, but gold's problematic. It's tough to transact and you got to chop it up. It's hard to make change. And so that's why people led to fiat and coins and the dollar and all this stuff. But ultimately, because it's under a person, man's control, it's all manipulated, right? So Bitcoin being built on proof of work and being built on physics and mathematics and basically immutable facts, right? They say Bitcoin is immutable. It's really just based on physics, the laws of thermodynamics, right? It literally takes that proof of work, that energy, and transfers it into a currency, right? Without that middleman. So there's no chance of manipulation, right? If there's some consensus and we want to do maybe make some changes to the code, we can do that. But it is the closest thing to just measurement purely by energy available and the amount of work it takes to extract that energy and to turn it into a useful energy that we've ever had, right? So once you realize that, you start to look at everything a little bit differently, right? Okay, here we go. Sorry, I got a phone call. I'm back. That gives me, it changes your viewpoint on when you see everything as energy. I don't even see it as Bitcoin. I see it as energy. But knowing that Bitcoin is tied to energy, that was when I switched and I thought, everything I do is money now, thanks to Bitcoin. Yes. So having been terrible at, you know, managing my money and finances, from, you know, being a young kid, not understanding it, and then being in a system I was so frustrated with, thinking I was losing, making terrible decisions, really, I was just working within a broken system. Some people are better at playing that broken system than others, but it didn't make sense to me. Now, all of a sudden, when I think of energy, I'm like, okay, well, do I go to the gym today or not? Would I rather spend my energy going to the gym, or would I rather spend my energy here? And then I think, well, the gym is energy. This is energy. So this is sats. This is sats. This is money. This is money. You know, it was this amazing switch flipped. And I think that's probably when that's probably the orange pill moment. And I was pulled out of the matrix and I'm like, I can't go back now. I can't go back. And so now it's easier for me to say, do I need to buy a new car, or do I want to store some energy for the future? Or do I need to spend money on this food, or do I want to support? Well, you know, in that case, I want to spend the money on the food, right? So it's like you weigh things in energy in a new way, that the benefits are so clear and so obvious to you that it just makes it so much easier to make smarter decisions for your future, for your financial future, and then also for your personal well-being. It transfers out of finances and just into every aspect of your life. Is this relationship good for me? What's it costing me? What's it costing me energy wise? What's it costing me time wise? Do I want to work with this person? Do I not? Do I trust this person? Do I not? Do I want to live here? Do I want to live there? It all makes those decisions easier in a very unique way. And that's why I think it's so interesting that what we're doing is finally taking our decisions and tying them directly to energy. And Bitcoin is just the throughput. So Bitcoin is cool, but really that energy to our decision-making connection is what makes it so profound.
Dude, I love this answer. This is, while you started talking, I was looking up a podcast that made this click for me, and it's not even a Bitcoin podcast. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say it, and I'll try to think about linking it in the show notes, but it's on the Aubrey Marcus podcast, and the title is The Shocking Truth About Our Energy Crisis with Nate Hagans. Mm-hmm. He's an energy expert. And they talk about all different kinds of things. But at one point he says, just also for the people listening, look around you, wherever you are listening, and everything you see has cost energy to create or still costs energy to maintain, right? So I see books made of paper and plants here, and I have a tea on the table, and you know, I have this screen in front of me, like I have
everything.
I don't know, you know, I had a carpenter fix the door here. Like everything is energy. And like when I listened to that podcast, I was like, yeah, this is really it. Like, this is really it, right? And that's also like what you said about gold. Gold is actually really the money based on gold is really the closest we got to energy money, right? Because gold is also condensed energy within that piece of gold, right? Created by the earth. So it does make sense to create a paper currency that is backed by the rocks, right?
Right.
But as you mentioned, it's difficult to transfer, and we know all these things, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, once you see that, and then how I visualize Bitcoin as being digital energy, right? It's physical energy transformed into a digital asset. Mm-hmm. I think I also have this from Saylor, but at one point he described it as like, if you visualize like a 3D cube, and that cube is one Bitcoin, and that is made up of 100 million little cubes, right? Mm-hmm. The Satoshis. And this Bitcoin is created through the usage of physical energy, and that physical energy is taken and it's all put into these 100 million little blocks. And mm-hmm. it's captured there. It's not physically captured there. It's digitally represented through the proof of work, right? So you know that one Bitcoin with the 100 million little subunits was created by using real energy. And then when you go to what you just said, right, if money is a way to exchange energy with each other, we want to use money that is actually created by using energy, because only then it has the right representation of the exchange that we agree upon with each other, whatever it is about, that doesn't really matter, right?
Right.
And so, yeah, I absolutely love this. And I think that is what eventually leads to what a lot of people say, you know, if we fix the money, we fix the world, because if we can transact in energy money, mm-hmm. and I also love this old newspaper article, I think it's Henry Ford, right, who talks about energy money backed by electricity, right?
Yep.
I mean, he saw it, this is Bitcoin is that, you know, if the money is not broken anymore, and we can agree upon whatever, you know, whatever you do for me is worth XYZ, then we have a real free market, because mm-hmm. then we are sovereign in our agreement.
Yes.
Instead of having a third party being able to dilute the thing we use to exchange value with each other, right?
That is
how we fix the world, because then we fix all the perverse incentives.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It's that is so that realization isn't what told me Bitcoin was so great. That realization is what showed me money was such a failure at that, right? Like it was money, fiat currency, right? It's like you're storing your energy, and every year you lose 10% of that value if you're storing your energy. Whereas Bitcoin is the opposite. So I'm getting to take control of my energy, and I decide when and where it goes. Nobody else can decide that for me. And like you said, the free market, not somebody in Washington, you know, at the Fed, or, you know, at a central bank or whatever, determines where my energy goes. Right now, they're determining where my energy. And when you think about it,
yes,
and you talk about Einstein's theory of relativity, right? I mean, energy is time. Those two go together. Space, time, and energy are all intertwined. So if they're taking my energy, they're stealing my time. And so I started looking at it and saying, oh,
yes.
Well, if I pay 20% in taxes every year, they're taking, 72 days every year they're taking from me. That's just for taxes. And then you take inflation, And it's like, okay, well, it's even more. And you say, well, it's only 5% inflation. No. It was 5% inflation last year. If it's 5% inflation this year, you take your $100 down to 95, and then you take another $4.25. It compounds, right? So it, over time and over the years, it's like they're stealing more and more of my years. By the time, I mean, if you do the math, like a 10% inflation, a 10% inflation debasement of your currency, right? In 25 years, you may have saved X number of dollars, even if you invested at a certain percentage, right? It still debases faster than any percentage you can get right now. I don't care what they say. So somebody on Twitter posted, maybe you can find my tweet. I can't remember, but they posted and said, hey, you want to have $5 million or $1 million in 25 years, take $580 a month, put it into these funds, you know, give $580 a month. And then I did the math and I'm like, okay, but you're taking $164,000 is what it is, right? And if you take 10% inflation and it continues, even with the amount you're doing, your $5 million or your $1 million or whatever the numbers were at that point in 25 years will only be worth $46,000 in purchasing power. So you're spending that time, that money investing into $150,000 of today's time. So in 25 years, you can have $50,000 worth of purchasing power. Right? The math doesn't so it doesn't work.
You're putting it in a black hole. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're putting it in a black hole on the wrong end, basically, right? And so it discounts your time. It discounts time and energy you already spent. And it discounts time and energy that you perhaps want to spend somewhere in the future, right? That's correct. What Safe Dean talks about with short time preference, long time preference. Yep. If you cannot save towards the future, how can you create time for yourself to pursue whatever you want to pursue? Basically, you stay stuck in the now. Yeah. And maybe to add to the visualization of the cube with the 100 million, you know, little parts in it. If you see that, visualize that, and then on the other side, think about what you just said, David, is that all the productivity of people is also energy.
Yes.
Right? So if you do something for me, you expend energy, and I give you something that has captured energy back, and you can save that thing until you spend it on something else that takes energy, right?
Yes.
So productivity is energy as well. So what is the bigger thesis of Bitcoin? Why does Bitcoin grow in value, right? If there's 21 million of these cubes with physical energy captured in a digital way, again, divided by 100 million, that's on one side. And on the other side, we have all the productivity ever of all the people now and into the future. That productivity is going to be captured in those 21 million blocks of Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Because this is the best way for us to exchange that energy with each other. I think that for me is like the bigger thesis there as to, does Bitcoin have value or where does it go, right? Slowly but surely, people will understand that this is the best way to save the energy that you get rewarded. And therefore, they will ask to be paid in this for the energy they expend.
Absolutely.
For their work.
Absolutely. And if you think about it, Samson Mode said that, you know, if you take 8 billion people, 21 million divided by 8 billion, you have like 259,259 Satoshis. Per person. I think that number is smaller. I think it's about 240, because I think that I personally feel that the million of Satoshis in Satoshi's wallet is truly burnt. I think it's gone. And then you have other, you know, people that have lost Bitcoin, you know, that it'll just sit there until someone can figure out how to recover a wallet. But I think I feel that it's really like 240,000 Satoshis, somewhere around there. And if you think about that, 240,000 Satoshis could encompass all of the productivity of a, for the entire life of a single person. Right. So yes. think about that for a second. Yes. If I start working at age 18 or 20, let's just say 20, a person starts working at 20 and they work till age 60 or let's say 70, right? Those 50 years of whatever their, all of their life, all of the work they do, all the things they move, all the effort they put forth, from getting up to going, those houses they live in, the food they eat, all of that could literally be encompassed in 240,000 Satoshis. That puts Bitcoin into a very different perspective and number. And then as people pass away, that 240,000 Satoshis or whatever it is goes into the next person that's born and becomes their energy, their, you know, potential for their lifetime, right? So it's, and it's not even that, it's even more because you got to spend energy to raise that kid, right? To get it up to age 20. So it's like looking at that, you think about that, you're like, man, if I say that, just take a fiat term right now and just assume that maybe over the course, the average person over the course of their life can produce maybe right now in today's spending, $2 million, $3 million in overall total, you know, work, revenue, spending, all of that, right? $3 million. Well, if a 240,000 Satoshis is worth $3 million, what does that make a Bitcoin target price? Now, that is a lot. I think it's a little ways off, right? We'll always have some. But, I mean, we're talking about very difficult to calculate and comprehend numbers at that point.
We're not 1 billion or something.
Per Bitcoin, right? And that fiat currency is not going to change. So what's really interesting is how do we eventually monetize things in Satoshis? Well, you're seeing it real time in places like El Salvador, right? With circular economies that are built directly on Bitcoin. They spent, let's say they spent, you know, 100 million Satoshis last year on their living expenses, right? And they earned 100 million Satoshis, one Bitcoin, right? Well, as the value of Bitcoin goes up like it did, now they get the same life, but they only have to spend 500,000 or 50 million Satoshis now because it's doubled in value. So it's, you're seeing it happen. And the more Bitcoin is adopted, the faster that that drop will happen. And so Preston Pish made a really good example. He's talking about houses, right? Like we think backwards about a real estate. You and I, before the call, we were talking about real estate, right? And some of the opportunities there. We're looking wrong at real estate. If you are doing well, your house or your business or your real estate should be worth less, not more. Right. The reason your house is worth more is because you're measuring it in a system that's broken. And so you're just hedging against the inflation. But realistically, if someone comes and buys that house from you, you still have to go live somewhere else. And if you just want to move down the road right next door, right, you're not going to get ahead. Right. It's the same number. You're going to buy that same house. So it would, maybe your house was worth 50 Bitcoin, you know, 10 years ago, well, now it's worth 10 Bitcoin, right? And then in 2 or 3 years, it'll be worth 3 Bitcoin. And then it'll be worth 1 Bitcoin. Then it'll be worth less than a Bitcoin. So that means the money you're using to measure is going up in value, giving you actual real opportunities to improve your life or do things differently, right? That is a hard concept for us because we value everything on that fiat standard. So you're basically telling me you don't need to accumulate more Bitcoin. Wait.
Yeah. We price it.
Right, right. There you go. We price it. We don't value it. We price it, right? So it's that is the hardest. I tried to explain that to a normie not too long ago, a good friend of mine, and it's like it just doesn't compute. Right? They're like, no. You know, my 401k is going up, my investments are going up, whatever. And I said, yeah, but they're not going up enough to beat out hyperinflation, because it's only a matter of time before that catches up. It's every single fiat dollar in history has eventually died and has been hyperinflated. Otherwise, we'd still be using denarii from Rome, right? So it's that is how entrenched we are in the system, that psychologically we have to do, you know, no, we always think NGU, NGU, NGU. And really, on a Bitcoin standard, it's NGD. Number go down, right? I bought a car at one Bitcoin, you know, 5-10 years ago. Now with the same Bitcoin, I can buy 5 cars. That is actually the way that we need to think. And that is what's so hard psychologically for us to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I did this exercise for homes in my country. I took the average home selling price per month from 2014 until now, January 14th to January 2024, and then denominated in Bitcoin. And in 10 years, the prices in euros went up 92%. In the same 10 years, Bitcoin went up, I think, 9,100%, something like that.
Yeah.
And so when you look at the average home selling in 2014, it was, I think, 1,100 Bitcoin. And in January this year, it was 10 Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
No, less, actually. Eight to 10. Still, people don't understand it when they see that. It's so interesting. You know, what that implies.
Yeah, it
exactly.
It, yeah. It feels, and it's completely backwards. It makes no sense to the way we've been conditioned to value things and value our time. It's completely backwards from how we should be valuing our time and our energy.
Yeah. Last thing to add to that, and I'm talking about this a lot, actually, last 2-3 weeks. Like, I love the example of why is it funny that a bread was 25 cents 50 years ago and it's $4 or $5 now. Like, make it make sense. You know, if you believe that humans strive for optimization and efficiency through innovating in technology,
yes,
everything, you know, this is what Jeff Booth says, right? Everything should fall down to the, you know, prices should fall to the marginal cost of production. So we should basically have free bread now, more nutritious than the bread of 50 years ago, and not have $5 breads. Mm-hmm. It's, we are going back in time. It's like the bread is a new invention, right? And it's coming on the market at a high price point. Mm-hmm. But that is not the case.
No, it's so let me say this. When I was in 20, probably 15 or 16, I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Kiyosaki, right? And he is a very polarizing figure in Bitcoin, right? It doesn't matter what your opinion of him is, but honestly, he's the first person that ever put it into my mind reading that book, that if you have a good society. And I think he didn't, I'm going to have to go look it up. I don't know if he said sound money, but he said a good society and that has good processes and good innovations. He said the price of everything you do or use in life should go down. The price of it, the cost of it. And I was like, wow, that even possible? And that was years before I really, you know, got into Bitcoin, right? I might have actually read that book before I heard of Bitcoin. I can't remember when it came out, but it was just that was eye opening to me and something I thought about a lot. And I was like, how do you do that? Well, then I thought, okay, well, you know, you're picking the Apple illustration is good and easy, right? It's like the Apple still takes the same amount of sun, the same amount of space, the same amount of time, the same amount of water to grow, as it always has, right? As far back as you want to go.
Yes.
So why was an apple a nickel 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago, and now it's like 50 cents, right? So it's like, why is it? And And I've had a conversation with an economist. This was really interesting. I was in DC at a bar and we'd all had too much to drink. So the conversation got a little rowdy, but I was talking to someone that literally used to work in at the U.S. Central Bank and someone that used to work at the Federal Reserve. And I was like, where am I going to get this opportunity to ask him these questions, right? So I start asking him these questions. And every time I say something, ask a question, I say, listen, I'm going to put parameters around it. I need you guys to stay in the ring here, in the guardrails, right? We can go down this path, but stay between here. And I'd say, if I have, you know, the land of David, and I make, you know, $2, and I give you each a dollar, and there's one apple, right? What is that apple worth? To keep you for you to survive. And they're like, well, I don't know. I said, well, if you don't have the apple, you're going to die. And you each have a dollar, what's it worth? They're like, well, it's worth a dollar. I said, right. So whoever gets to me first gets the apple, they survive, right? And I have a dollar now. And now you have the apple and then you grow an apple, same thing, right? It's only worth $1. I said, but what if I take and I give you each $2? Then what's the apple worth? And they're like, oh, well, it's worth $2. I said, right. What changed? The only thing that changed is the amount of money in the system. That is the only thing that changed, right? And I said, so I believe that the money in circulation is the only reason for inflation. And they're like, well, no. And I was like, well, why not? And they said, well, you know, we need debt for innovation. We need debt for new technology. I said, well, why? I said, if you don't have a dollar and you're going to starve if you don't get that apple, you have motivation to go out and figure out another way to get an apple, right? I said, but there's no way to issue debt. Take that out of the picture. Yeah. How does that apple increase in value? And they said, well, it doesn't. And I said, bingo, right? But then they start saying, but it's not that simple. It's not it's complicated. You have supply and demand, you have other countries or whatever, all this stuff or whatever. And I'm like, you're just overcomplicating it. It's really that simple. But until you see it and really understand, take the time to absorb and understand it. And they're going to be a longer term than I am, right? Because they are literally living and working and breathing every day in that money system. So they're buying all of the lies, all of the works, all of the inefficiencies, and they're living in it. That's where their living is. They make their value in the inefficiencies of our fiat system. And so it was a great, fun conversation, right? Yeah. And eventually we just had to say, agree to disagree. Let's enjoy our drinks. But it was really interesting to see someone. That was my only opportunity I've ever had to talk to someone on that level, that personally, in the fiat system. And it really just came down to, they won't understand it because it's not complicated enough. They feel like if it's not complicated enough, it can't be right. And if I don't understand it or I disagree with it, I'm just not smart enough, right? I haven't gone to the right universities and I haven't studied economics the way they have. So that was a very interesting, eye-opening experience. And that tells me it's going to be, when the dollar goes, and it will, it's going to be tough. It's going to be hard. It's going to be violent. It's going to be like, you know, Zimbabwe or whatever, right? It's going to be like all those other places where the dollar has been hyperinflated, and it'll hit us harder, harder, harder every year, and it'll get harder and harder and harder.
Yeah. Your internet was lagging a bit, so I hope people got that, but we'll see that in the edit.
Great.
But yeah, to add to that, what I find interesting in the example of the apple is great, right? Going back to what we talked about with energy, it still takes the same amount of energy to create the apple, like you said. So why does it need more units representing the same energy to pay for it? This is really what people need to wrap their heads around. And once you understand that, you also then understand that the value of your home, you know, didn't go up. The price went up because the value of what you price it in went down. It's the same as the apple. It's not different, because then people will say, well, homes are different than apples. No. It's the same principle, right? And I also love what you said about these guys explaining, like, oh, it's way more difficult than you think, and blah, blah, blah. I've spent 10 years in the startup world. I've heard thousands of ideas. I've learned that if you have to substantiate your idea with more and more and more words and explanations, it's a bad idea, right? Like, you can have a good idea in 2 to 4 sentences, but then if someone asks a question, right, if your idea creates more questions than answers, and then mm-hmm. you have to, you know, give a speech as to why that is a bad question, or no, it's not the case, then it's just a bad idea. If you cannot convey it in 2, 3, 4, 5 sentences,
yes,
then it's just a bad idea. So interesting experience there, because that is their defense. Their defense is to talk, where in Bitcoin, I love that, you know, it's the work, it's the walk. You can check. Yeah. Anyone listening to us doesn't have to believe us. You can check that this money system actually works like this. It's audited by 18,500 computers every 10 minutes, right? Yeah. And the Federal Reserve in America has never been audited. But you mm-hmm. should believe 2 random faceless people you didn't elect based on their words, right? Like right. that should become more people's principle, right? Like yeah. I should not listen to this person. They should give me the option to validate and verify if what they say is true.
Yeah, it's I read a book by an author called Bo Lozoff, Lozoff.
And I think you're muted.
Nope. Can you hear me now? Am I on there now?
Yes.
Okay. So I read a book by a gentleman called Bo Lozoff, Lozoff, and I actually heard about him when I read Mr. Rogers' biography. He was a big fan of Bo's work and his writings. And he has a book called Deep and Simple. And he says that all thoughts and ideas that are true, right, are truly simple and easy to understand, but deep and difficult to comprehend, as opposed to complicated and shallow, right? And so that was and he used that from yes. kind of a spiritual background to help rehabilitate criminals and violent offenders and things like that. He was very, it wasn't like religion specific, right? But it was a very interesting take. And he said, you know, it's like, he was a Christian. So, you know, as a Christian, it's like very easy. I believe someone made a sacrifice for me. And I feel like I want, based on that love, I want to live my life the way that, you know, kind of giving to others, right? So it's like, it's a very simple idea, but it's hard to put into practice and hard to really comprehend. It's deep, right? And so he would take those ideas. Bitcoin is like that. It's a very yes. simple idea, very simple. Something I am proud of is, you know, people post, it's like, hey, 100,000 sats. I'll give you 100,000 sats, you know, for the best answer to this question or whatever, right? And somebody posted on X, and I responded, it said, describe Bitcoin in 3 sentences. Right. And I was like, man, that's tough. It's like everybody was saying, oh, it's this, this, and this, and this. And people were writing whole paragraphs. And you're like, that is not that's not 3 sentences. Right. But it was very simple. How do you describe it to someone who's never heard of it? And it's essentially, I just had 3 really basic points. It's 1, it enables you to store your time and your energy in a way that it can't be stolen and taken from you. And it also, it's a way for you to be your own bank, store your time and energy in a way that no one else can steal it from you, giving you the opportunity to better plan for your future or something like that, right? It was super simple, but at the core of what Bitcoin is, that's what it does. I've got some connectivity issues. Hopefully I'm coming through here, or at least at the end, it'll edit. But that was, it's a very simple idea, but it takes so long to absorb it and understand it because it's the ramifications are so deep.
Yeah. I actually had a conversation with my friend today about why, we talked and we ended up with, like, you know, it is really true that the journey is more important than the destination. And then we had to laugh, right? Like, oh, that's such an old saying. Like, It's so dorky and simple, but it's always true, right? But at one point, someone came up with this thought, and enough people actually agreed with it for it to become a thing that, you know, survived through time and is still something that we use today, right? And so we talked about it, like, why do we think it's dumb? It's kind of dorky, right? And then we agreed that it's kind of like this ego thing, right? Because you can, when you actually have experienced a certain journey, you know that that journey was way more fun and valuable than where you ended up, right? You can feel that if you actually had that type of experience. But when someone says the journey is more important than the destination, you start to think, you know, rationally think. I think like, no, it could not be that simple. It is blah, 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 like all these, like you think of stuff to add to that, right? Mm-hmm. And I think here it's the same thing with Bitcoin. It's an ego test in that sense, right? Mm-hmm. That if now I lost my train of thought, but what I wanted to say is like, with Bitcoin, I feel like it is exactly as you said, it's a simple but very profound idea, right? We should use a money where energy is captured to exchange energy with each other, as we just talked about. But damn, there's so much history before this, right? There's so much contextual information that people can use to mislead perhaps your initial feeling of, that sounds like a good idea, right? And they throw you into this rational thinking distraction hole and try to bamboozle you basically with all these, you know, models and Keynesian and blah, blah, like all these things. And, you know, eventually, and every time I say stuff like this, I feel like some people listening to me will definitely find me like arrogant, right? Like, look at him talk or blah, blah. But it really, like, once you are here, it's just like, why doesn't everyone see this? Why are we letting ourselves being manipulated by these third party faceless people that we don't know, and they are like messing up our time preference basically, mm-hmm. right? And our energy allocation because of that. I don't even know how to say it differently. Like, this is where you end up, right? And like 2 weeks ago, I had a conversation with a guy, very smart guy, CTO of a company. And we talked about Bitcoin, and he was like, yeah, but I don't think it's going to be anything. But he understood everything about the money being broken and the time preference being, corrupted and all these things. But then he said, like, yeah, but I still think people are egotistical and they will, you know, abuse each other, et cetera, et cetera. And then I asked him, like, hey, do you have kids, right? Because, for me, it's a big motivation to see if I can be part of something that can fix the money, right? And he said, no, but that's also a reason because I don't have kids. And for me, it was the first time, like, I know that some people think like this, right? But for me, it was really the first time I had like a face-to-face conversation with someone I deemed intellectual and intelligent and open-minded. And then he said that, and that actually made me super sad, man, when I thought like, and I also said that to him, I said, well, so you basically gave up. Like, you give up to the faceless third-party people that just influence your life. And instead of spreading your energy to anyone who wants to receive it, you just stay in this little corner of life, and you know that is just it. And he said, yeah. And I found it so just saddening, just seeing someone confine themselves because there is this influence over his life that he actually understands, but he still accepts it, you know, like, what, I don't know, it was a little bit of a tangent, but what do you think of that?
I think that's let's see. Let me think about how to say this. I hear a lot of people, and I talk about it too, I kind of joke about it, right? And saying toxic maximalism, right? It's like we're just aggressive towards anybody, whether they're a normie or whether they're a, you know, altcoiner or whatever, right? It's like, and don't get me wrong, I'm a maximalist, right? But I try not to be toxic, but some days you just get angry. But I realized, talking to my friend, having this conversation, it was intense, because you're basically putting into question their very existence, right? You're putting into question the way that they value themselves. And so when you say you're not valuing yourself right, it's a very arrogant statement. It's very difficult to pose that in a way that doesn't sound demeaning or arrogant. And so it's really easy to take that negatively, even if it's not meant that way. And I think when I say, if I say I'm toxic, I'm a toxic maximalist, I only get angry because I care about those people and I see what I see. And I'm always doing the best to, and I feel like I finally have an answer to so many questions in life that were making me miserable, right? Just destroying me all the way to my core, to my soul, right? And so when you talk to someone, especially someone close to you, family, or, you know, it's, I mean, I loved, you know, on Twitter, on X, hearing people talk about, you know, having to talk to their family at Thanksgiving and Christmas, you know, and they're like, just, this is me not trying to bring up Bitcoin, you know, it's like, I got to stay quiet. I can't talk about it or whatever. Cause it does that to people, but we feel that way because we just so desperately want to help our loved ones or our friends, or it's sometimes even just the person who we see needs it. You know, it's like you see people that are not as good. I've been very blessed and very lucky to be able to make a living for the last couple, 2-3 years in this space. Before that, coming into this space, I just thought I was coming in for a fiat job, right? And I got lucky. And before that, I mean, I was almost broke, right? Like I was losing the fiat game, right? So I was desperate. When I had, you know, no money in the bank, or even if I had a little bit of money in the bank, but I had debt, you know, on the credit card or something like that, and I was worried about how I was going to pay bills, I remember just laying there awake at night with all this anxiety and stress and just literally staring into the darkness, like, how am I going to do this? How am I going to do this? Right. And one of the things I mentioned to Saylor when I got to shake his hand and say hello was that, you know, I've done a 180, right? I started putting my money in Bitcoin and valuing my time and effort and money in Bitcoin. And I still have a little bit of debt, right? But I've been able to pay it off more aggressively. I've been able to save, when I save my time and my energy, it lasts longer, right? The value of it, that my time and energy has held because it's in Bitcoin, right? And so now I told him, I said, I'm evaluating things from an interest to Bitcoin perspective. And as long as I think I'm going to make more value putting my money in Bitcoin, I'm not going to pay that debt off early. I'll make the payments, right? But I'll put it in Bitcoin and, you know, just on a hunch, because I know if I leave it in dollars, it's not going to save anything. And paying off the debt with a broken dollar doesn't get any easier. It just gets harder and harder and harder over time. So I did that. And now all of a sudden, out of nowhere, you know, my own personal value, however you want to value my wealth or estate or whatever, right, went from being negative to being positive in a short, short period of time. And so now I'm like, this is the cheat code. This is the cheat code. I sleep like a baby. Like I sleep like I don't worry about anything, knowing I'm storing my value in Bitcoin and knowing that you would think, if you had asked me 3 years ago, how would you feel if you had $0 in the bank, no cushion at all, you know, and your bills are coming up or whatever? I was doing that. And I was stressed out and I was miserable and I was angry and I was unhealthy. And now it's like, I have $0 in my bank account. How do you feel? Oh, I'm great. I sleep great. I know my, you know, it's like, I know my time and my effort is valued in a way that nobody else can, you know, what's it? Hard money you can't fuck with, right? It's like, I know that my money is something that nobody else can mess with. I decide when to spend it. I decide what it's worth. And I decide how to store and how to use, right? That alone just took all of those anxieties away. And so you want that for other people. You want that for your loved ones. I want it for my boys, right? Because I don't want them to go through this the same thing I went through for the last 20 years before I found it. Struggling with that system that was broken, right?
Yeah. I actually wanted to ask you how has Bitcoin had an impact on your life? But I think you just answered that. So that is
there you go.
Amazing.
Yep.
Let's move on to I wanted to wrap up to the last question that I ask everyone. And that is, what is a core belief that you will never let go?
What is a core belief that I will never let go? Man. I think this goes back to your comment about the intellectual individual you were having a conversation with that, you know, just kind of made you sad, right? Nothing we do in this life, in my opinion, is incredibly valuable unless it helps others, right? And I feel that the best way you can help others and help yourself, right, is to have kids. Or if it's not kids, you need to find someone else in your life, right, that you live for. So I guess the core belief is life is better when you live for others than when you live for yourself, right? So I think now, especially in this community, so many people that didn't have connections, didn't have family, didn't have, you know, a support net, right, from a friend perspective, person perspective, they found their tribe, you know what I mean? And so when you find that tribe and you're truly grateful for what you have and what you've been given, you don't want it all for yourself. You want to give it away. You want to help other people. And so even when it was painful in this industry and, you know, I was working for free, trying to learn things and do things, my goal was just to always try to, whoever's in front of you, whoever you're talking to, do whatever you can to make your life better. Right. And one of the best compliments I've ever received was from someone we're walking around and actually a Bitcoin conference. Right. And they said, wow, it's like you find somebody or something that you think might be interesting to me. Right. And you willingly bring me into the conversation and then just step back. Right. It's not about us. It's about what we're doing for other people in the future and stuff. That makes me feel better, right, than when I get accolades or I get things, you know, people tell me thank you or whatever, right? It's like we're all just building on the great stuff that other people have done. And we're all just building for the future, right? Eventually, we're all going to be gone, right? So the question is, you want a legacy, you want to be known, or even if you don't want to be known, you just want to do good things, right? You just want to make this world better. You have to look for opportunities to do something better for other people, not yourself. And so my core belief that I'll never, ever let go of is living for others is always better than living for yourself. And so that is it works everywhere. It works everywhere. I guess it's kind of the golden rule, right? Do unto others as you would have them do unto you, or even do unto others better than you would like yourself. So that's probably my core belief.
Love it, man. Thanks so much for sharing that. I really enjoyed this conversation.
Me too, Brandon.
I will link to your Twitter or X account so people can follow you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, man, let's stay in touch and thanks again. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, it would be amazing if you could rate, review, and subscribe on the podcast platform of your choice. It will help us educate more millennials on the importance of Bitcoin. You can follow and connect with me on Twitter. I'm Bramk, that's @BRAMK. And if you are or know someone who has an interesting perspective on Bitcoin that's worth sharing, hit me up. I read and reply to every single message. I appreciate your support and hope you'll be here for the next episode. Thanks for listening. Bye.